The Marketplace, or Jeremiah. Had the parson's nose been longer, had he followed his instructions, then the terrible destructions of the bishopric of Tonga would never have occurred. Had the parson used his potion, had his wife been twice as pretty, had their house been in the city rather than the mighty ocean, no one would have stirred. But the parson was a madman, quite convinced his nose would dwindle, so thereto he fixed a spindle recommended by the adman, a Catalonian curd. On the spindle hung a bottle, a quarter full of gooseberry brandy. This was just to keep it handy. A favourite of Aristotle brewed it, so I've heard. Had Aristotle been a parson, had he grown his nose correctly, instructed by his wife henpeckedly, followed everything minutely, watched the bishopric astutely, shunned the craft of arson, then he would not have erred. The drivers of cars who wear hats on their heads are a scurrilous breed who veer to the right of the road, and to those who esteem them I cry, your cars are not beds, though your somnolence seems to show you're ignoring the code, for this you should die. And though they reply with some biblical phrase culled from the Psalms or the 17th chapter of Job, I shall silence their wrath with a curse. Your cars shall not laze, though experience seems to show that your ears lack a lobe and your pocket a purse. But however defective their bodies may be, there can be not a doubt that each one is a mischievous rogue who embezzled the funds of the king while drinking his tea, though analysis seems to show in a broad Highland brogue that they know not a thing, being burglars and living in Leamington Spa, where the blackest of shields may be seen by the light of the moon. They know every inch of the palace where they travelled by car, though statistics appear to show they had hats on too soon, for such is their malice. And thusly disguised, with the funds in their grasp, they travel the roads of the world from the east to the west, and to those who decry them I deem all people should clasp what intuitive thought seems to show is the biggest and best, for such is my dream. Let time and tide for no man wait, for no man but for me whom mighty Jove ordained should hold in thrall the sea, for me and my companions whom at random now I choose, let all of nature wait for us, for there's no time to lose. Our wooden elk is built and tried, our armour's newly plated, the table's laid, the kettle's boiled, and all the cheese is grated. But though the fruits are peeled and dried, a heroine we lack. I'll send my friend to look for one, for he's a maniac. 5 years have passed, 6 weary weeks since those last lines were wrote, and in that time I've made for me a large elastic boat, with rubber on the tiller and a lovely springy keel, I hope therewith to go to sea and catch a lengthy eel. But wait! They shriek from perchy crags, our heroine is come. For her I'll bake a loaf of bread and finish every crumb. For her I'll kill the fattened calf or swap the favourite cat. But wait! What are the earnest fiends intently looking at? The planet yawns, the seas roll back, and peeping through the crust, the eye that every Muslim fears gazed out with mighty lust. Gazed! No, it blazed and roved the scene combustible and dry. It ploughed the hills and scoured the rills and bent the woods awry, and left behind a cindered orb an incandescent sky. Let time and tide for no man wait. The eye has risen now on us who hope to tame the things that time has taught us how, or master the complexities of large elastic craft. On us, the hopeless arrogant, at whom the Muslim laughed, on all that Buddha e'er betrayed, on all that Krishna saw, who knew the wonted order but forgot the wanted law. Thusly let the cycles pass within their ordained paths, a chain of sordid pilgrims filing through the greasy baths, gazing reverently at bones, the which, or so it said, are we who were so lively once that we could not be dead.